Hello and welcome to The Fathers, a show about two different kinds of fathers. A married dad of five kids and a Catholic priest. We're friends and we're talking about sports, beer, movies, and the everyday joys and challenges we share in common.
I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Father Chip Hines.
And as you may guess by Father Chip's sign-on, he is the priest of this pair. And I'm the dad of five kids. So welcome to this first podcast, Father Chip.
Yeah, this is great, Dom. We've been talking about doing this for a long time, and I'm just glad that we're finally getting around to doing it.
So we should probably give a little background on who we are,
yeah,
and how we're connected. We've done something like this before.
Right.
We've done two different radio programs together.
That's true.
So,
which is bizarre in and of itself that we've done two radio programs together.
Exactly. So we're located in the Boston area. You're a priest of the Archdiocese of Boston.
I am.
I used to work for the Archdiocese of Boston. We promise that this show will not be all about Catholic stuff, but it will be part of what we talk
about. Well, it has to be. It's who we are.
But it's also about being dads of two different sorts and
right.
Guys who are interested in interesting things that guys like. So we worked, you are a priest of the diocese, I worked for the diocese, and when I worked there, we had a daily radio program of 5 days a week called The Good Catholic Life.
And I hosted one day a week,
yes,
which was
I think it was Fridays.
Yeah, it was Fridays, and I took over for Father Mark O'Connell, who became Bishop Mark O'Connell recently. I always used to kid him that he was Wally Pipp and I was Lou Gehrig, and turns out he was Lou Gehrig and I was Wally Pipp.
On the other hand, maybe that chair of the Good Catholic Life was a stepping stone.
Yes, that's it, Dom. Yes. Yeah. I somehow don't buy that.
Well, and then after that, I came to work for you,
yes,
in your parishes.
Yes.
Parishes in Walpole, Mass.
Yep.
Where I was communications director. And we did a radio program there together.
Right. And that was on the network, that the Station of the Cross network, that that the owner of the station that we worked for, you know, that had the Good Catholic Life on,
right,
asked me, and I asked you to be a part of that. They have a show that's on 5 days a week. We were doing Mondays.
Yeah, we were doing one day a week.
Thank God. And 5 days would have been ridiculous.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, we couldn't have got anything else done.
Yeah.
But it was. It was a show. It was a call-in show, and people would call in and ask us questions.
Sometimes they would call in. A lot of times it was just you and me talking to each other, begging people to call in.
Well, remember, there was that one time we had like 7 calls, and it was the most they had ever had.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, in a one-hour program, the 7 calls is a lot.
That's a good number.
Call-in sort of advice show.
Yeah.
I mean, we tried to do something a little different. We wanted to do more newsy, sort of talking about the news sort of stuff, and that's not what the audience was really looking for.
No, wasn't that audience. We were the weird, we were the Charlie in the Box misfit toy.
I'm a cowboy that rides an ostrich.
That's right. We were that oddball day of the week that they just didn't know what to do with us.
Right.
And eventually it became too much for us to do anyway, so I think they got what they wanted.
Yeah, I think they would have kept us going.
They would have if we wanted,
but we'd both decided that it was just not, it wasn't worth it. We weren't getting out of it what the time we had to put into it.
No.
Given all the other demands on our time.
Exactly. And I was basically doing it on my day off. Not that I'm not doing this on my day off, but that was
every more work
week.
Yeah, exactly.
For a year.
Well, and it was live radio.
Right.
So you have to be there on time. Although that was the winter. Remember that was the worst winter.
The worst winter we can remember.
History.
Yeah.
Well, like it was like every Monday for like a month we had off because we had a blizzard.
That's right.
And so we couldn't do it. We didn't, like, there was like a month where we didn't.
Yeah,
do
there was
show.
Yeah. We did it for 12 months, but we really only did about 11 months. Maybe 10 and a half. But yeah, but we did that for a little while, and
we had a lot of fun.
We did have fun when we could do it the way we wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I will say they were pretty good to us as far as that goes.
They gave us a pretty free hand. I mean, they let us. And everyone, I've got to say, everyone at the Station Lacrosse Network is a peach. They're all great people,
top notch.
But it was just not something that we could do. But now, like, and even then, we were saying we ought to be doing a podcast because we used to have such great conversations. Just hanging out, talking about sports or movies or whatever, what guys talk about.
That's right.
And so we finally, now 2 years later, whatever it was, not even 2 years, I think we're like about a year after we started talking about it, we're finally getting to do this.
Yeah, I made it real because I bought a microphone. I said, if I'm buying a microphone, we're doing this.
Yes, I mean, once the money's on the table.
Right.
Yeah, all bets are off.
That's right. Well, and we probably should say, you know, I am a Catholic priest. I've been a priest of the Archdiocese of Boston for about 12 and a half years now. And, you know, I've served in a bunch of different parishes here in the Boston area. And it's been, you know, for me, it's been the blessing of my life. And, you know, I'm very often every day excited about what I do. You know, not that there hasn't been some lean times, tough times, but there's been a lot more joyous times than there have been tough times. And you know, both of us grew up here in the Boston area.
That's right.
And I grew up in a little north of Boston, and you were in south of Boston.
Yes.
And, you know, and so, you know, we got that different perspective, too.
Right.
So.
But we're about the same age.
We
are the same age.
Yeah.
So you were a priest for 12 years. I've been married for 11 years.
There you go.
I got 5 kids starting at 10, going down from there to 4.
and they're very cute.
No, we just had dinner, and my wife's not putting them to bed, but we just had prayers before bedtime. Today, as we record this, it's the vigil, the eve of St. Nicholas.
That's right.
And so they were putting their shoes out by the fireplace, because apparently St. Nick's going to do some B&E tonight, and he's going to leave some chocolate coins in their shoes.
Well, that's good of him, you know.
Yes. Well,
I think.
You know, he's busy. It's not like he's not coming back in like 2 weeks.
I know. It's crazy. What he does is unreal.
It's overcompensation.
It is. It really. He makes the rest of us look bad, is what he
does.
But,
you know, he's got great teeth because he's got that dentist, Herbie.
That's right. It's exactly right. He's got his Herbie and he's got his Charlie in the Box and everything else.
See, we were talking about this at dinner, like the Rankin Bass Christmas specials. I mean, that is such a part of my childhood.
Oh yeah,
kids younger. I mean, now you can go to iTunes and you can rent it, you can buy it, and you watch it whenever you want. But when we were kids, like this stuff came on like once a year.
Once a year.
And like if you missed it.
You missed it.
You were done.
Yeah.
Like, maybe like when I was starting to get into high school, we had a VCR.
Right.
And you might, like if your mom had to take you, you know, go someplace.
Right.
You might be able to figure out how to record it on the VCR and hope your brother didn't record Baywatch over it or something. But now the kids can watch stuff anytime
they want.
And I don't know, does it ruin it?
Well, I think it. Yes and no. Yeah. Yes, I think it ruins that sense of anticipation. But no, I think the ability to, you know, to be able to rewatch over and over again, I think is kind of cool. I mean, it's. Let's be honest. If we could have done it when we were kids, we would have. You know,
but there is, like, as a parent, I do try to limit. I like for their own good. Mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said for things that you can only get like at Christmas time. Like,
oh sure.
I mean, maybe watch it a couple times at Christmas time.
Right.
But only really watch it at Christmas time.
Right. Like I only watch It's a Wonderful Life at Christmas time.
Exactly.
I don't watch it in July. It makes no sense to watch it in July.
Or to another season. Watch the Ten Commandments at Easter.
Right. Absolutely.
Charlton Heston.
You know. And wasn't The Sound of Music always on around that same time?
I thought it was Thanksgiving.
Maybe it was.
Because we did watch The Sound of Music with the kids at Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And I thought that was when it was.
Maybe. I don't know. It's hard to keep all that stuff.
My sister-in-law, Patty, that you know.
Yes.
She goes to daily mass at your parish.
Yes, she does.
When my brother and her were getting married 20 odd years ago, she was in a phase of her life where she watched Sound of Music every day.
Really?
Every day. She wanted to be Maria so bad.
That's, I'm not going to say that's a little bizarre. I'm going there.
There's no bones about that. That's kind of bizarre.
Yeah. I, there's no way to sugarcoat that. And I mean, wish there was.
There are worse things.
Oh, sure. Sure. She wasn't pulling, like, the, you know, wings off of flies or anything. But, you know, thank God.
Yeah, I just kidding. Patty's the nicest person. She is. She is Maria Von Trapp.
She is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And, you know, like a lot of your family, they're very, very kind. Very good people.
Yes, they
and,
are.
And I see them all the time. You know, it's funny. I see them. I see Patty more than I see you, I think.
I'm sure you do.
Only because she comes to daily mass.
And she lives close by. She goes close by. Yeah. Okay, let's...
I'm saying, exactly.
Let's not disparage my...
I'm not. You know, while we're talking, though, we should tell them what we're drinking, too.
Yes. So as we're going to have some regular segments, regular things we do on the show. And one of the things we want to do is, because you and I both like, we like beer.
We like beer.
We like, you know, whiskeys and scotches and that whole thing, and wine even. And so we're going to kind of talk, like, each week, each time we record a podcast. I don't know if we're going to do this weekly. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes.
If we get lots of demand for a weekly show, maybe we'll do that. But for now, each time we record a show, we're going to have something good to drink with us, and then we'll talk about it and just kind of maybe have a recommendation. Because I tell you, there's a place near here where I live. We're at my house this time, and next time we'll be at your house. But we're recording right now at my house, and then there's a place called Craft Beer Cellar in Braintree, and they have several stores in the Boston area, and I think they're expanding around the country.
Yeah, I think they are.
And they only sell beers from small breweries, like none that don't sell to major distributors.
Like not Bud.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They do sell a couple of Sam Adams products, but not the regular Sam Adams, like the special.
Right.
They're like a beer wine thingy. I don't know what it is, but maybe we'll try it someday.
Maybe we should.
But they'll do some imports, like Belgians, but it's all like specialty small brewers, and it's awesome. I love that. It's like I go in there and I skip through the aisles with a basket.
Which is an image unto itself.
The door opens and the angels sing, oh.
and he gets there, and the owner's like, oh, he's here again.
Oh, I can make a boat payment.
He's here. That's right. I'm buying my new yacht. Thank you for coming.
I'm spending my kids' college fund.
That's right.
So this week, I've picked up a few beers, and we're both drinking an Allagash Brewery Saison.
Saison.
It's French, although it's a Belgian-style ale.
Correct.
So Saison, I learned... It was a French farmhouse style.
Oh, okay.
And the idea was it was brewed by farmers as a light, drinkable beer that the farmhands could drink at lunch while they're out, you know, taking a break from the fields.
Wow. They're lucky they get to drink at lunch.
They're French.
I know. God bless them.
God bless. No wonder why they have a 30-hour work week. We could work longer. They're all hammered by the end of the work day. But this is really nice. I've had this once before.
It's really good.
It's like straw colored.
Yes.
And as a saison, it's a session style beer, which means, and I love the definition of session style, which is that you can drink it in a session. Like you can drink several in a session.
I think you could.
And the implication is several in a session and not get hammered like off your tree.
Ah, yes.
Because it's not very high in alcohol.
Correct. But it's got a good taste to it. And it's, you know, what I like about this particular one in Saison in general is you can drink it and not have that, you know, that IPA aftertaste deal.
Okay. Let's come clean with our listeners right off the bat.
Yeah.
I raise my hand to God. Do not like IPA. I do not drink IPA. I know it's the hot thing.
It's the hot thing.
Everybody's drinking it.
You can't walk into a liquor store, a beer store, the Wegmans supermarket without seeing about 1,000 different kinds of IPAs. It's insane with the IPA.
So the last time I was in Craft Beer Cellar, I was out talking to the guy, and I was telling him, it's easy for me to buy beer because I just, half the beers are all IPAs, and so I don't buy any of those.
That's right. There you go.
But I said, and I was telling him, I just don't like IPAs. I think it's way overdone. And he was telling me that, like, the brewers, all the different breweries to stand out are going crazy with the amount of hops they're throwing.
Oh, it's insanity.
It's like a pickle. It's
hop sanity.
So he said, well, here's an IPA that you'll probably like. You'll like this one. It's the least IPA of the IPAs. This is the one.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, all right, I'll buy one. I took it home, and my wife, Melanie, and I, she doesn't like IPAs either. And we both try it, and we're like, no, that's still an IPA. That's still bitter as the last ex-girlfriend I had. No, it was bitter. It was, ugh. But, I mean, this Saison is nice. I mean, there's that... It's that beer, slightly bitterness aftertaste, but it's in a good way.
Which is the hops.
It's you still get the taste of the hops. I mean, there are some. I love my favorite style is a porter.
Oh, sure.
Or a stout. I love both of those.
Yep.
And there's some great ones out there. The darker the better from my point of view.
Interesting.
But I like it like a nice light.
It's nice every once in a while to have a light. Ish beer,
yeah, not a light beer, like Miller Lite,
not like Miller Lite, but a light on, you know, it's just not so heavy,
exactly.
Because so I mean, I love Guinness, but you know, two is about what you can drink,
right?
You know, and if you're out and about with your friends and you're in a restaurant or a pub and you're having more than two, you know, you can't have two. You can't have six Guinness. I mean, if you had six Guinness, you'll be full. You're like,
right.
It's like eating six loaves of bread.
I was gonna say having two Guinness is like eating a 12-inch sub. You know, I mean,
yeah, exactly. So
it's
something
a
like this is nice because you could pop back a few, like watching a game or something like that,
yep.
and you wouldn't feel, you know, you wouldn't feel like you were overdoing it.
So speaking of being a beer snob, yesterday I was at my brother's house. We had a party for my mom's birthday, which was an excuse to get together to watch the Patriots game, which we'll talk about in a second.
Which we should talk about, yes.
Yes, but and he's like, hey, you want a beer? And he got in his hand a Bud and a Sam Adams. And I'm like, yeah, give me the beer instead of the other thing.
Well, now you're a real snob.
Yeah.
See, I don't hate IPAs like you do.
Yeah.
You hate them with a perfect hate. I can tolerate them from time to time. I don't mind trying a new IPA every once in a while. My brothers really like IPAs, and my dad loves IPAs, and I'm like the black sheep of the family. I'm not Mr. IPA, but I will drink one. And in fact, I had one yesterday. It was the Mayflower IPA. It's a brewery out of Plymouth.
Yeah,
and their IPA, I actually could have more than one.
Oh.
And it's still IPA.
It's still,
you know, so
still
it's,
bitter.
Yeah, but there's a place near me, a restaurant that has it on tap, and I find that I like better than the can.
I bet because the tap uses that carbonation,
right?
The carbonation tends to it obscures the taste buds a bit.
You can,
so
yes.
So that you don't get as much of the bitter.
Right. So I think that's why I like it there.
Yeah.
And that's what I use. I'll get one. I got one, and then I switched over. I think they also have Sam Adams, you know, lager, the regular lager on tap. So I switched over to that. But I'm not that big of a beer snob. I will drink a Miller Lite. I will drink a Bud Light if it's offered. I've even been known to drink a Michelob Ultra from time to time, which for a lot of people, it would be considered heresy.
I'll drink a Corona.
Ah, yes.
You know, it's in the summer when it's hot.
Yep, sure.
And I'll drink Shandy's. I like a Shandy.
Yeah, the Shandy is good. That's
lemon Shandy, not grapefruit Shandy. That's an abomination.
I don't like the grapefruit one.
Why?
Why exactly? and Sam Adams does it too. They have a grapefruit
it's
one.
It's really weird. Someday I'll tell you about how I got Sam Adams Cream Stout introduced to the state of West Virginia. So all of you listening in West Virginia, you can thank me for getting Sam Adams Cream Stout. So we'll make a note of that. We'll bring that back again in another show.
There you go. And now
let's talk the big deal of the week, the sports segment.
Yes.
So as we mentioned that this is December 5th. Yesterday was December 4th. It
sure
was which a momentous day in
a
the
great
in the world
day
of sports.
In the history of the New England Patriots,
the history of the NFL
franchise and the NFL, yes, the National Football League.
If we wouldn't get sued, I'd play an NFL film
exactly
song right now, but I won't do that.
Well, we just might as well say Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time.
He's the GOAT.
The GOAT. won his 201st football game as a starter.
An
unbelievable record, will probably not be beaten for many years. Your kids may see it, but we may not.
Right. Well, I tell my kids all the time, appreciate what we have now.
Oh my gosh.
Because
yeah.
this is a golden age. This is
like living in the late 50s, early 60s in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and they were winning the NFL championship every year and Vince Lombardi was their coach. This is the same thing.
Yeah, there was a you post on Facebook a this graphic
picture, yeah.
I think the Patriots put this together. So here's some of the stats on Tom Brady. 201 career wins. He passes Peyton Manning. 179 regular season wins, 22 postseason, 114 wins at home against 31 other franchises, which is all the other franchises. He has not beaten the Patriots yet.
No, he can't beat the Patriots.
Well, yeah, that would be a bad
thing.
But
if anybody could, Tom Brady could. he could beat himself.
Exactly. Yes. And he's done it in 37 stadiums. He is undefeated against seven teams.
Which I found ridiculous.
Well, here's the Hall of Shame.
That has never beat Tom Brady and the New England Patriots.
The Atlanta Falcons, take that, Greg Willits.
Yeah.
The Chicago Bears, the Dallas Cowboys, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Is it the Jaguars?
Yeah, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Lions. Well, that's,
the Lions, they stink. Sorry, Detroit.
And the Vikings. Now, what is with Chicago, the Lions, and the Vikings, is that not the whole NFC North?
Well, it's almost.
Oh, the Green Bay.
Green Bay is not there.
That's
yet.
Right.
What did they used to call that on SportsCenter? Chris Berman used to call it the NFC Norris Division. Going back to the old hockey divisions, it was the NFC Norris Division.
That's awesome. I mean, that is just to be undefeated. Now, granted, most of those are NFC.
You know, they're NFC teams.
They're all NFC teams.
Yeah, they're all NFC teams.
It's not like they meet.
No, wait, Jacksonville's an AFC team, right?
Yes, because the Panthers are NFC.
That's right.
I always mix those two up because they're latecomers.
Right.
And they're both cats.
It's true.
And both in the South.
Panthers and Jaguars.
Yeah, it's really confusing.
They shouldn't do that.
They shouldn't have done that. So, but you know, so they don't see them all the time. But
right.
In the course of his long career, he has seen them several times.
Several times, and they've never beat him. The fact that the Cowboys have never beat him, that makes my heart warm. And Chicago too, because of what they did to us in '86 in the Super Bowl.
That embarrassment.
That was. I mean, let's face it. I was thinking about that this morning. For some reason, I was thinking about the '86 Super Bowl.
We all think about the '86 Super Bowl on a regular basis.
But it was the thought that came to my head was the New England region was the only region of the country that thought they even stood a chance in that Super Bowl.
Oh yeah,
they had the best defense in the history of the NFL. That Chicago Bears team.
Oh yeah, and they had the shuffle. Yeah,
well, of course, that's what did it. But I will say, I do think of that from time to time, because that year, it was the 85 season for the 86 Super Bowl. That year, the 85, it was the fall of my senior year, your senior year,
yep.
High school. And I had some older friends, due to my job, I worked at a fast food restaurant, which I won't say because I don't want to give them free advertising. But I worked at a fast food restaurant, and there's some of the older guys in Reading, where I grew up. Used to work there, and so they had season tickets to the Patriots, which wasn't hard to get back then. You know, people must have to understand that. And so I went to all 8 home games that year. I was there when they beat Cincinnati, and they tore down the goalpost and marched them down Route 1. Now, I did not help them tear down the goalpost, but I was there.
Wait, was that the time when they marched them right into the electrical wires and someone got electrocuted?
Yes. That was the time, because even in victory, the old Patriots could not do something right. It was unbelievable. These poor guys, they tore down the goalpost and were marching them down route one, and they had somehow managed to hit the electric wires, and they electrocuted themselves. Just say they might have won. If the Darwin Awards existed back then, they would have won it.
They would have won.
But that was a great. But anyway, Tom Brady. We got to talk about Tom Brady.
Yes,
not 86.
So some more stats. 50 comeback wins.
That's awesome.
50. out of his 201. 41 regular season comeback wins, 9 postseason, which is the key ones.
Yes.
69 wins against the AFC East. 26 against Buffalo. Take that, Mike Denz.
Yeah, Mike Denz.
Our old producer from the Calling Out Catholic
That's
radio
right.
days. 19 against Miami. Not enough against Miami,
That's
I have
right.
to say.
Miami is their nemesis.
It
their
is.
True AFC East nemesis.
Yes. When they play Miami, that's the one I worry. I mean, although in 22 against the Jets, I mean, they... Everyone always says the Jets are the game where it's always up for grabs. But I mean the stats
it's
right
Miami.
Here tell you. Yeah, it's always Miami. And then for some reason in this under AFC East they put the Colts. I'm not sure why, but
well they used to be in the AFC East. Way back.
Yeah, but
when Brady first started. When Brady first started, they were still in the AFC East.
That's I thought
they realigned the divisions at some point. Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was the realignment was before that.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that's why they have them in there. I had questioned that at first too, but
yeah.
The thing about when we talk about when people in New England, especially fans of the Patriots, talk about Tom Brady, it's like the way that people in Chicago talk about Ditka. And the right. Bears, right? You know,
Or Walter Payton. Yeah.
Or whoever. But you know that old Saturday Night Live skit where they're talking about Ditka versus the Hurricane. Ditka. You know, what if it was Hurricane Ditka? You know?
Yes, yes.
You know, but that's the way it is here. Who's you know, we talk about Brady where it's like, well, Brady versus Chuck Norris. Well, Brady, you know, I mean, you know.
It's not even a question.
It's not even a question. But Brady wins everything.
The amazing thing with this 201 is Brady at 201 versus Peyton Manning at Peyton Manning at 200, he kind of dragged himself over the line.
He did.
I mean, he was
kicking and screaming almost.
He was well past his expiration date.
He was.
At that point.
He was.
Brady
definitely.
Isn't even close. Barring, God forbid, knock on wood.
Hey, don't even say it.
Barring that, something traumatic that would, oh my gosh, I'm going to get a
don't
tear.
Don't even say it.
I have a tear as we think about it.
I'm having a heart attack.
But barring that, Brady's got a bunch more wins.
Oh.
I mean, all of these other guys he passed, they were all at the very tail end of their capabilities.
Right.
They had tailed off.
Right. It was Brett Favre. It was Peyton Manning. They were all at the end. Brady still looks... I mean, based on what we see this year, he looks like he could go for a long time. And if he does, even if he goes 2 more years or 3 more years, they win 12 to 14 games a year. The record's going to be almost
impossible.
Unbreakable.
Yeah.
It's going to be DiMaggio-esque with that 56 game hitting streak that no one can seem to beat in baseball. The closest guy I think has 120 wins.
Right.
The current
right.
players.
I can't think of anybody playing today where I say he has a chance someday of breaking Brady's record.
No, it's you know, I would have said Andrew Luck a few years ago, but the way that team is playing and the way the bad luck they're having on that team, I don't see it happening. I would have thought maybe Russell Wilson, but his game is so centered around his ability to run and move outside the pocket to make the play extend, that's gonna break down on him at some point, and he won't be able to do that. And he's not a pocket passer. He can't see. He's not tall enough.
Right.
And so it you know, Russell Wilson's not gonna break it.
Now, something to consider though is, of course, no quarterback wins games by himself.
That's true. It's a team sport.
And even
Brady said that.
Yeah. And there are quarterbacks out there who would have been great quarterbacks who got stuck on terrible teams. And
true.
And who knows what they would have done. And conversely, if Brady had got stuck on, you know, the Detroit Lions or...
They would have been awesome.
All right. They would have been awesome.
I mean, come on, he's Tom Brady.
But you know, think of it like a terrible team with a terrible defense, and you know, when Brady doesn't have receivers to throw to,
right?
He doesn't have receivers.
Well,
so part of that is Belichick, and part of that was Scott Pioli back in the day. Versus
it was the defense in those first 3 Super Bowls. There was the defense.
Everyone
that,
always said
every yeah the defense helped win those Super Bowls. I mean, he didn't have Randy Moss. He didn't have a big time wide receiver. He had Troy Brown.
Well, he had Deion Branch for 1 year,
and he had Deion Branch.
Yeah,
but the fact of the matter is, those two guys, as good as they are and as how beloved they are in New England, they're not Hall of Famers.
No.
And you know, the lone Hall of Fame wide receiver he had, Randy Moss, they did go to the Super Bowl, and they were robbed. They lost on a fluke play against the Giants. And, you know, I mean, it's you know, and every time I think, Brady should have six rings.
He should.
He should have six rings. That's the insane part of this.
The thing, too, about his receivers is he makes his receivers better.
Oh, yeah.
It's as well as Belichick. I mean, it's a secret sauce. It's Belichick and Brady.
Right.
You know,
those two, you could have put Belichick and Brady on any team.
Right.
And they would have made that team what the Patriots are today.
Better. And I mean, the Patriots' success is about a lot of different things that came together. You had a great
True.
Owner who
yep.
was willing to do what
Step
it took.
Step aside.
And Jerry Jones, not.
Hey, say that's to you, Jerry Jones.
But, you know, he was willing to do what it took to get a good team and to get out of the way. Great front office personnel
yep.
and you know, general manager and personnel guys.
Yep.
You know, great defensive coordinators and other coaches and stuff. It was the secret sauce of all these things that came together. But Brady is, you know, still the best quarterback of all time on top of that.
Right.
I mean, what you've seen here is unlike, I mean, in any sport, is there a team that compares to what the Patriots have done over the past 16 years?
I mean, it's hard to...
Maybe the Yankees?
Maybe. I mean, but the Yankees is so... Their history goes back so far.
Right.
And I mean, they haven't done it recently, you know, where you'd
right.
say, oh, yeah, that they're a dynasty right now. But, I mean, you think about...
I mean, in the 90s, the Yankees won a bunch.
They think they won twice, right?
Oh, I thought there was more than that.
I think they only won twice.
So they're 27 over their... is it 27 or...
Yeah, it's 27 because they won an 09.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is... It, you know, it's the sustained excellence
right.
of the New England Patriots that's mind-boggling. Because when you think about it, I think I was listening to a sports show today. They say, based on the number of victories he has, it averages out to about 12 and a half wins a year over the course of his career. No one does that.
Right.
No one. The Patriots have done it.
Right.
The Patriots have done it. Since Brady has been the quarterback.
Right. It's not about the Super Bowls alone.
No, it's not, because they go to the playoffs every year.
Right. It's the fact that it's their... I mean, of course, everyone, you know, the champion is who wins the Super Bowl. But when we're talking about just quality
right.
over a period of time...
Sustained excellence.
They just... The team wins.
It's unbelievable.
And as we saw this season, they can win without him sometimes, you know?
Three
out of four.
They can. I mean, you look at the lost year of 08 with Matt Cassel was the quarterback.
Right.
Brady got injured in the first game and was out the rest of the year. They went 11-5 and missed the playoffs. I mean, who goes 11-5 and misses the playoffs?
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Well, that was a tough year.
It was a weird year.
Yeah, because the other teams were doing
the Jets,
better.
I think, went 11-5. And got in because they had beaten. I think they had beaten the Patriots that year. It you know the fluke of the way the NFL's you know tiebreakers and this and that works towards the playoffs. But
right.
to go 11-5 and not make the playoffs when a team could win their division by going 8-8 and still make the playoffs, that's criminal.
Right. Right. The things are better than they have been in the past, but it's still you still get these fluke years where a better team doesn't make the playoffs over a worse team.
Right, and this year, let's face it. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like this year is a down year for the whole NFL. I feel like there have been a lot of cruddy games that just couldn't even keep your interest. There's been ties. There's been two ties this year.
Who ties in football?
It's ridiculous.
Because they went over to London where they play soccer and
right.
tied the games over
they
there.
They did.
Don't do that.
Don't go to London. Although there's a rumor that Jacksonville will be moving to London.
That's just ridiculous.
It's stupid.
Like, I don't get... Like,
It's a dumb move.
I can't see the Players Association going for that because every other team that has to then travel to London,
right.
it's just that much more
difficult. For eight games.
Right. That's just more difficult for the players of the other teams.
Well, think about Seattle having to go to London. I mean, that's just not right. It's unfair.
Right. You'd have to schedule it before or after a bye week. I mean, it's all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, or an East Coast game or something.
Right.
I mean, but still...
But the bending over backwards in order to get that done,
exactly.
it's not worth it.
Right. It's not worth it, but that's the rumor. But I think Tom Brady, Dom, I think we can safely say to all those out in the heartland of Indiana and where else? Where else did Peyton play? Denver and, you know, all those people who...
Louisiana
and the Drew Brees and...
Well, isn't Peyton from Louisiana?
He is. Yes. And San Francisco and Joe Montana. And I'm sorry, Pittsburgh, but Terry Bradshaw's not that great. Tom Brady is the best that has ever played this position in the NFL, and it's not even close.
We'll be talking about his 250th. That's my prediction.
There you go. Wow. All right. I like how you think it, Dom. It's awesome.
All right. So enough on sports for now. Let's move on to our next segment. So today we're going to talk about... you know, often we'll have a segment where it's like where we have a main topic. But for this week, our big topic was, you know, just introducing ourselves. So we're going to move on to another one, which we're going to regularly do a pick of the week. Now, our pick of the week can be anything. It could be a book, a movie, something you drank, something a gadget you bought, an app that you're using. Could be anything. But just something that kind of stood out for you this week. And so starting out for our first pick of the week, Father Chip, what do you got?
Well, my first pick of the week is a book. And I've just started it, and I'm just getting into it. But I think for the Catholics out there, you will want to get into this. It's called Benedict XVI, Last Testament in His Own Words. And it is available on, I have it on my Kindle app, and it's available in anywhere you can get books. And it's basically, you know, what it boils down to is it's his last words to the world, sort of formally to the world.
So this is a book he wrote, not a book about him.
No, it's a book he wrote with an author who, Peter Sievald, who has worked with him in the past. And so just to give you an example of the part one is called The Bells of Rome, and it's called and then it has like the quiet days in Mater Ecclesiae, the resignation, you know, part two, life and service, his childhood, his parental home, the war. He talks about that, being a theological star, Vatican II, you know, working with the Pope and then suddenly being the Pope, you know. So it's kind of his last words about his last part of his life.
He did a book-length interview with Peter Sievald years ago, probably 20-some-odd years ago,
yeah,
which was really great. I think it was the Ratzinger Report?
Yeah, that's what they call it, yeah.
Yeah, and so it was really good. And this one, I mean, it looks like the last chapter, Shortcomings and Problems, you know, where he kind of comes clean on where he felt like he didn't measure up.
And I'm sure that's what it's all about. I mean, he talks about his pontificate, he talks about his journeys, he talks about it, and then he's honest. He talks about his shortcomings and problems. And, you know, I think the thing I like about Benedict the 16th is his ability to, you know, really be introspective about himself and about his pontificate, and about his life. I mean, I think that's a beautiful thing. I wonder, you know, about other popes and being able to do that. You know, he's honest about himself. I think John Paul II was too. You know, John Paul II was much more of a showman, but and that was his style, and you know, and we grew up with that.
Well, it's the sort of the oddity of being Catholic is, you know, popes, especially in the modern age, they tend to live a long time. You know, John Paul I accepted,
yeah,
poor guy. But the most popes, they live long. So for you and me, I mean, I don't remember Pope Paul VI.
I don't remember much of it. I remember when he died.
Yeah, I was 10 years. We were 10 years old.
Right.
So I wasn't much aware of him then, except until he died. So you know, John Paul II for 26 years, and then Benedict for 7. Was it? No, no. Even 2005 to 2013.
Right.
So 8. 8 years. I'm really good at math.
I'm not.
And I'm not either. So
math is not my forte.
Math is hard, says Barbie.
Yeah. Barbie's right.
Barbie's right. Anyway, 8 years, and then Francis for a couple years, for three years. So we don't have a lot of experience with a lot of different personalities, but... You know, we are getting there, though, now. Well, you got to figure there are a lot of different personalities.
Yes.
Some really bad ones in history.
True.
But, you know, we've only had experience of a couple different kinds of Pope.
That's true.
Know? And so... In our own mind, the way you pope, if I could make that a verb,
poping.
If you're going to pope, ignore me. I'm drinking beer. But
so am I.
We have a limited experience of what that's like, and so
true. So, I mean, our experience of the Pope is Pope John Paul II for the most part. That's how we understand the Pope. That's how we understand, and that's why I think. For me personally, and I'll only speak for me, I find the current occupant of the chair of St. Peter is very difficult because he's not John Paul II.
Right.
And John Paul II was clear. His teachings were clear. There was no ambiguity. There was no room for, you know, seeing it one way or seeing it the other way. I find Francis, who I like. I find his style is not as clear. The clarity right. is not his thing.
And to clarify a little bit from what you're saying, and I think we're in agreement on this, is as far as his pastoral ability, is his personality with people.
Oh, great!
Is amazing, and it's a lot like John Paul.
A lot. Yeah. His outward personality is John Paul-esque.
Now, John Paul wasn't exactly like his theological work. Was dense. It was very academic. It was very thick.
Yes,
you had to work at it. But with Francis, it's much more.
It's accessible.
It's accessible, but sometimes he says he doesn't specify. He's not.
No, he's not specific and he's not clear. And I right. think that's the problem I have, because
perhaps Pope, not academic enough.
Right. The Pope should be clear. The Pope, the teaching of the Roman Pontiff should be. You should be able to look at it, go, aha, I see what he's saying there, and move on. I feel like, and this is my only complaint, really, is that he's just not clear enough, and that sometimes can open up areas of confusion. And
as a spiritual father, he's great, but yes. as a teacher, he leaves a little to be desired.
Exactly. That would be my only point.
Yeah, and you know what?
And I love the Pope.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure everybody. I'm not a Pope basher.
Don't write letters to Cardinal Sean.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, seriously.
Spell Father Chip's name right.
Leave me alone. I love the Pope. I am having fidelity to the Pope. My issue is I think he can just be a little clearer, and I think if he was a little clearer, people would understand exactly where he stood, and then that would answer a lot of questions.
Right.
There's just too many questions left unanswered or ambiguously answered, and that's never good for the Pope. The Pope should be the one thing the Pope, in my opinion, should be is clear.
Yes.
His teaching should be clear, because if it's not, then it opens himself and the church to a lot of, you know, sort of.
Well, it can hurt
second
people.
Guessing.
It can hurt people who
it sure can.
Who make an assumption in one direction, then
find out no, that's not it.
And then they don't understand why the church has quote unquote changed.
Right.
Her
exactly.
Teaching,
exactly. That's my only point.
Okay.
But anyway, what's your pick of the week?
So by coincidence, because it's not always going to be this way, but my pick is also a book that I just picked up and I'm reading. It's the first book of I think it's a two part series called Rise to Rebellion, A Novel of the American Revolution by Jeff Shara.
He's good.
Yeah, it's a good book. What I'm enjoying is we're seeing right now, I'm still in the beginning, just mm-hmm. before the start of the revolution, but the run-up from 1770 to this book takes place, 1770 to 1783, the revolution, and you follow John Adams, principally John Adams, Ben Franklin, General Gage, the British general who is in charge of all forces up and down the East Coast, and then eventually George Washington. And what he does is, the author, he's very, very careful to only follow the source of things that they actually said and wrote in the time. So
okay.
He does. So they have dialogue.
He's not speculating,
right? He has so he'll have like a conversation between John Adams and Abigail Adams.
Okay,
you know, talking about his concerns after the Boston Massacre, say, but everything he says there is part and parcel of the sorts of things he said, whether in letters to Abigail or the or he said in other places that are recorded.
Okay,
so never anything that's sort of. So this
he doesn't make it up,
right? And then, and this is if this were written by someone else, they might be have this idea that they want to sort of debunk the founding fathers, or you know, sort of show them in a new light, or even like anachronistic, you know, make them hip and cool.
Oh, brother!
Which I will say, I am a fan of the Hamilton play, but it's a play, a musical play. It's got a particular viewpoint, a particular thing it's trying to do that's different from this. We can talk about Hamilton another time if you want, because I'll get into it with you.
Hey, listen, I'm not Mike Pence.
But this book. It's really good. So, you know, follows Ben Franklin. You see like the reactions to as their a realization how in the beginning they didn't want to separate. They didn't want independence.
Right.
They just wanted to be good subjects of the king. They wanted to be treated fairly.
Right.
And just time after time, it was just things happened, whether it was by an American side or something the English did, that just kept driving the further and further apart. And the king and the parliament and the whether it was Lord Hillsborough, who was the minister for the colonies, and others who followed him, who just kept doing things that alienated the Americans.
Right.
And it's very interesting to see the connections to today, this sort of the alienation and the feeling that they're not represented, their
sounds
voices
familiar.
Not being heard. Exactly. So it's a really good book so far. I'm really enjoying
That's
it.
Great.
Rise to Rebellion, a novel of the American Revolution by Jeff Shara, Shaara. It's available ebooks and all that sort of stuff, and in hard, you know, in regular paperback, that sort of stuff. Good book. I recommend it so far.
Well, there you go.
I haven't finished it, but I'm going to make that my pick of the week.
Excellent. And it's fun. That's fun that we both picked books this week. I'm happy that we did that because we do like to read. We're readers.
Yes.
And that's important. Someday we'll some shows we'll probably talk about TV. We watch TV. And
yep.
We are pretty selective about those things and movies. I do a movie show on Catholic TV called Searchlight. So I do go to the movies a lot. I'm seeing Manchester by the Sea tomorrow.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then I got to go see Jackie Thursday night. The one about Jackie Onassis.
Oh, that with Queen Amidala.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's a nice Star Wars connection.
Star Wars nerd here. Speaking of Star Wars,
Rogue One's coming up.
I have my ticket right here on my desk. You can see it.
Oh, look at that!
There.
I can see
my ticket to Rogue One coming up on December 16th. I've been saying December 13th for like 2 weeks, and people keep calling me.
Yeah, they do. I saw that on Facebook.
And I'm like, I'm just excited. I want it to be earlier. I need my.
Well,
Star
I'm
Wars
very one. Excited about Rogue One. I must say, just to preview it, I guess. I'm very excited about the prospect of it. It's funny. You'll get a kick out of this. I last story from me. I have a friend named Father Matt, and Dom knows Father Matt, and we go to dinner a lot. And the other night, he was complaining about Rogue One, and I said, "Why are you complaining? What's the problem?" Well, why are they doing this story when they haven't finished the other story? I left a movie with a girl handing a lightsaber to Luke Skywalker, and that's the last image I see in the movie. And now I'm going back in time to another era and finish the other story first. I said, well, originally it was supposed to come out in spring, in May, but they pushed it to December, next December.
Right.
I said, you're going to have to wait till next Christmas to see it.
Well,
I don't want to wait.
Well, I mean, the thing is these movies take 2 years to do. I mean, that's just the long short.
But that movie's basically done. They were going to,
well,
the second movie in this.
The filming is done.
Right.
It takes, I mean, nowadays, with especially in an effects-heavy movie, it takes months to get the special effects done.
Understood. His complaint was they filmed the Lord of the Rings all at once and got it all done. And they were able to release it every year at Christmas. Was a Lord of the Rings movie.
Well, if you watch, I watched the special edition commentaries. Every year They were finishing the print of that movie as a plane sat on the tarmac waiting to take the print to Los Angeles from Wellington, New Zealand. I mean, it took every second available to get that movie done.
I believe it.
Even though they'd finished the filming.
I believe it.
But the thing is it took them like 6 years to film it. Like,
they did, yeah.
That's a huge commitment on the part of the actors.
Everybody.
And the crew and everybody. It's just there's a reason that's not done
these days. I know. It's just funny that he's like... The image of Rey with the lightsaber extended. She's still standing there in my mind, like until he takes that thing from her, you know.
Well, we already know that the next movie actually starts with that scene where she's holding the lightsaber.
Thank God.
So we figure out what he's like. What are you doing? That's not mine. and we were kids. It took 3 years to get a new Star Wars movie. I remember that. I remember walking out of Empire Strikes Back going,
that was awesome,
and then realizing, I got to wait for 3 years.
Oh, well.
So, last quick story from me. I watched X-Men Apocalypse last night.
Oh, that's right.
For the first time. And it was all right. I'm confused with X-Men. I don't know what timeline we're in and where Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen went.
Patrick Stewart's disappeared, apparently.
But apparently he comes back in another Wolverine movie that's coming out sometime.
Oh, good.
I mean, the Wolverine movies, and they're all called Wolverine. I don't know how they do that.
Yeah, I don't understand why they do that.
I'm very confused by the X-Men movies. And they're also Marvel movies, so I'm not sure where the Avengers are.
They're not there. For some reason, they're not there, and I don't know why.
I think there's a rights issue. I think they're actually different studios. Just like Spider-Man, they had to get special permission from Sony, which is why Sony keeps remaking Spider-Man.
Right.
Because that's the only one they have. Anyway.
That's true.
So, in one scene, it takes place in 1983, the X-Men Apocalypse.
Yes.
And in one scene, the Jean Grey and Scott with Cyclops guy and Nightcrawler, they're coming out of the movies. They're coming out of scene in Return of the Jedi, and they're arguing over which was better, the first Star Wars or Empire, and then Jean Grey says, "Well, we can all agree that the third movie always stinks," which is funny because that's the third X-Men movie,
right.
And da. But don't put down Return of the Jedi.
Don't put down Star Wars. Period.
They're all good except for the ones that we don't acknowledge their existence.
Well, that would be true. Yes,
but we can talk about Star Wars another time.
We can, and we should.
We should, because we're going longer than we thought we would. But
way longer.
But we're having fun. So
that's right. That's all that matters.
Yeah. If you got bored, you turned it off 15 minutes ago
or longer.
So that's the Father's show. We're talking about fun stuff that we enjoy, and hopefully you enjoy.
And we will do this as often as we can. It won't be every week, but it will be, as often as we can. And we hope to keep it fresh, keep it lively, and we hope that you'll tune in. And someday in the future, we'll have a way for you to give us feedback. And
You'll find us at, by the time we actually post this online somewhere, you'll be able to go to thefathersshow.com, and that'll take you to wherever this show is living, and there'll be links to subscribe in a podcatcher software to send us a message or an email to tell us what you think. We'd appreciate that. And till then, you can find us online.
Yes. I'm on Twitter. I'm at CHINES, at Chines. When I first signed up for Twitter, that was the Twitter handle that Twitter gave me based on my name, Chip Hines. And so that's where I'm at Chines. And I'm on Facebook. Looking on Facebook, just looking out there. But at Chines on Twitter is probably where you can get me the best.
And if you want to find me, you can go to my website, batnet.com, batnet.com. I'm on Twitter, @batnet, and you can find links to my social media stuff on my website at batnet.com.
Well, until next time, this is Father Chip Hines saying God bless you, and I hope you have a great week.
Bye-bye, everyone.